You're with Noel Debien on ABC Local Radio.
Good evening and good to be with you. Tonight, a bit of a jam-packed program with quite a varied sort of offering, I suppose. In this first hour, we're going to talk about funeral rites because the Anglican Archbishop of Sydney, only just 2 weeks ago, there was a bit of a media stir after he was talking to a church meeting, the Synod, and thought that songs like I Did It My Way and that sort of thing were not really, he called them not communitarian, too individualistic for funerals, that this was symbolic of deeper things. Well, that sparked a bit of a media discussion, and tonight we're going to talk about funerals. What's appropriate for them? We've got spokespeople from the Jewish faith, from Catholic faith, from Anglican, and we've got musicians as well to talk about some of those issues that have been raised and which are talked about among many groups. In our second hour, we have Professor Alberto Maloney, who is, I suppose the best way to describe him would be a world expert in the history of the Second Vatican Council, that council which changed the Catholic Church so profoundly 50 years ago and, of course, had ongoing effects among other Christian churches as well as they related to the Catholic Church. We've got Luke Geary turning up to talk about, your rights under the law in terms of public disorder. We've been watching that Curti case of the young Brazilian man who died after being tasered, and it raises issues of what your rights are when that is happening to you or someone you know, and we're going to look at that in our second hour. Now, first, though, to get us into the mood, a little music, really, to make the point.
This is a Sunday Nights podcast.
It was my way.
Oh, there you have it. It's a sentimental song and a well-known one. And it was the target, I suppose, of a comment a couple of weeks ago in a church meeting in Synod. Now, this was among Christian believers, so the conversation was sort of an inside conversation that got reported outside. But where the Archbishop of Sydney was trying to make sense of, this is the Anglican Archbishop of Sydney, trying to make sense of how things are changing in funerals. And in fact, he said these words to his synod.
One key, I should say, to current Western indifference to religion and the gospel is this deadly individualism. I did it my way. It seems as though we simply don't need each other as we used to, nor do we need God. To think that a person would be so proud of the phrase, I did it my way, that they would use it as a summary of their life's achievement at their funeral, reveals an astounding moral ineptitude, a sort of vulgar egotism.
There you have it. That's what I'd call an uncompromising talk. But to contextualise it, that was inside Synod, where everybody was a practising Christian. But the point that's been made there is that things have been changing quite rapidly over the last 20 years. I've been reading a major report from England where, of course, I Did It My Way is now the most popular song that's chosen by British people for their funerals, which is telling you where their sensibilities are going. And I wouldn't be surprised if the case was also probably the same here in Australia, as very popular. Because as religious practice continues to drop and we see the measure, the hatch-match-dispatch thing is losing its hold, that, you know, you baptise or you bar mitzvah or you do the beginning and then you do the marriage and then you do the end, at least if people aren't practising. And then there's also that move, because people are less practising, particularly among Christians, that they want to make services more personal. The personal tribute begins to outweigh the placement of the individual into a wider social community or network of either synagogue or mosque or church. And to talk about those things tonight because they are, I suppose, very personal and interesting things. We have, an eminent and large panel for you tonight. We have, and I'm going to introduce you with their theme song as Stephen Fry did first, Father Peter Williams, who's the Vicar General of the Catholic Diocese of Parramatta, currently in charge while Bishop Fisher's away, and he was the former National Director of Liturgy for Australia. And here's your tune, Father Peter Williams. There you have it, just to make not too fine a point on it. And we have also sitting with us here Canon Chris Allen. Canon Chris Allen works at St Andrew's Cathedral and also runs the healing ministry there. Now, he often has to deal with things like state funerals and big issues because they come into the cathedrals. Chris, this is your song for tonight.
Always look on the right side of life.
There you go. And it has been used at funerals, I guarantee you. And then in the centre, flanked by all of these people, Rabbi Jackie Ninio from Emmanuel Synagogue. Now, Jackie, we've invited here because when you hear about Jewish funerals, I think you may get a surprise at how they're run, a very pleasant surprise, and perhaps we might learn a thing or two from the way it's done. And Rabbi Ninio, here's your song.
Goodbye, Israel. May you ever grow in our hearts. You were the greatest place to set where lives were torn apart.
And we know which funeral that came from, and we're going to talk about that a bit later because that's come up in quite a bit of the discussion, the funeral of Princess Diana. We have also with us here in studio Mr. Ross Cobb. Now, Ross Cobb is the director of music from St. Andrew's Cathedral in Sydney. And Ross and I met, in fact, last year when we were, well, we met really quite closely last year when we made the carol service for the ABC TV One last year. And again, Ross has to deal with Chris Allen, sometimes with families who are trying to choose music for their funerals and in trying to, at an emotional time. And Ross, here's your song. And that one does appear also, you know, because, of course, it has a lot of sentiment within it and people relate to the sentiment. Also we have, not representing a religion as such, but Chris Timmons. Now, Chris Timmons is a funeral director. And Chris, I discovered when I found a thing called Life Celebrations, which I later on discovered was a subset of a larger funeral practice. And we're going to talk about that in a minute too, Chris. And here's your song.
You're simply...
And there you have it. I think there's about five songs there which do turn up quite constantly at funerals. But let's start with you, Chris, if that's okay, Canon Chris, because the Archbishop of Sydney sort of set, well, he didn't entirely set the ball rolling. The media did by grabbing it, of course, but he did make the point. Now, he made the point, I think, quite strongly too. Do you share the concerns?
Yeah, absolutely, I do. We live in a society now where people want to be individuals. Community isn't as central, isn't as important anymore. It is still when for families, I think. I notice that my kids play sport and community plays an integral role there. But I don't see it still, I don't see it in our community in other spheres as much as I'm told it was in decades and generations gone past.
There are certainly changes happening. Father Peter Williams, can I ask you, would you share the Anglican Archbishop's concerns? Because I think you will, won't you?
Yes, we would share those concerns, Noel, because I think what's happened is that there has been a change in around the culture and particularly the way in which people in Australia now want to memorialise death. You played the song for Rabbi Jackie before, Goodbye, England's Rose. And some years ago when I was doing research on this, I think that when Princess Diana died and the audience for her funeral was enormous, and what we saw there was a shift take place because elements, very profound secular elements, were included in in what had been a traditional Anglican burial office.
Hmm.
And I think when people saw that and thought, well, if that's good enough now for this situation...
For the mother of the king, as
yeah,
it were.
Yeah, why can't it be good enough for us? So I think we moved into what I would refer to as being the notion of the celebrity funeral.
So the rot started with Princess Diana, is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't put it that strongly. I wouldn't put it that strongly, but there was certainly a shift. I certainly think that we can perceive that a shift took place.
Ross Cobb, you said you would. Why would you say?
I just think it introduced things which were tacky, to be honest, into something which was otherwise very profound and very moving. And I think in 30, 40 years' time, people watch whatever medium they watch, DVDs or the equivalent of in 30 years' time, thinking, what on earth is that guy doing on the piano in the midst of all that glorious music?
Is it not fair to say that the tastes differ, though, and the genius of the funeral could be argued that they found a way to put Elton John in and still use the funeral sentences and still use the song for Athena? Lots of fine music was used, but this is sort of somehow finding something together?
Do you think it was appropriate to sing a song which is written about Marilyn Monroe to be, you know, addressed towards the possible... Well,
I won't answer that. I'm trying to be a neutral
Queen
journalist.
Of England.
Trying.
I think that was just tacky. You could have chosen something. If you wanted to add something which was more populist, I guess, surely there would be better things to choose than a sort of second-hand song.
So you've got the association of Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
That's in your head.
That's why he wrote it. Bernie Nelson wrote it for that reason.
Well, can I ask you, Chris Timmons, you've got a new company called Life Celebrations. Now, this is a sub-branch of a more traditional funeral directorship that you run. Why the new business?
The market is changing in the sense that many, many funerals are using the words life celebration to orchestrate what they feel the funeral should be. And it just occurred to me at one stage that this may well be a marketing opportunity.
A business opportunity, in fact, because the market's saying we want this.
Absolutely. I thought the song maybe Money's Too Tight to Mention might be more appropriate for me, but the reality is that at that point, people are not necessarily... They're coming to the funeral director as the first point of contact, not necessarily the church or the rabbi or somebody else.
This is part of the breakdown, of course, of church attendance.
For a very good example of that is, 30 years ago when I started, funerals would be 2 or 3 days later and everything would stop and everyone would take the day off for the funeral. Today, almost half your funerals are done on Friday because they don't want to interrupt the working week.
Have you seen also a change, though, in religious celebration or not? I think you have, haven't you?
Yeah,
can you tell me?
Certainly, if I went back to in Sydney, for argument's sake, probably nearly 50% of funerals are cremation services. If I went back 30 years, almost all those would be done by a Catholic priest, an Anglican minister, or some other minister of a Christian religion. Today... less than probably 20% are conducted by ministers of religion. 80% of that cremation portion of the funerals are done by funeral celebrants.
So it's not religiously based at all?
There's an each-way bet always put in there, because there's usually the Lord's Prayer or some form of prayer.
Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, something like that.
But it's thrown in more as a just-in-case concept rather than a religious funeral.
But it is something they remember clearly from their growing up. Or
correct. Yeah. It is an element that they want to put in. Very rarely do we do a completely non-religious funeral.
Well, just holding all these thoughts, celebrity funerals, trying to, I suppose, draw a line over where and what the church will or won't do, the changing market, which is just a fact of how people go, and matters of taste. Rabbi Nino, can I ask you, I was fascinated when I was talking to you about how a Jewish funeral is conducted, because I haven't actually been to one personally. But in a sense, there's it is the great leveller in a way, death. It struck me anyway, that's the way I'd put it. So can you just tell us briefly how a Jewish funeral is characterised, what's the coffin like? How does the ceremony happen? Is music used?
Well, to start with, music is not used. When we chant, we'll chant the prayers in the service, but other than that, there's no instrumental music and there's no recorded music, because during a time of mourning, that's not considered to be appropriate. So that's, you know, music in that sense is a sign of joy and celebration and something that you would use in that context and not in the context of a funeral and a time of mourning. And actually, there are three mourning periods in Jewish tradition, and for those periods of time, it's even beyond the funeral not permitted to listen to, you know, music in that sense.
You explained to me that sitting shiva is sitting the 7 days, and during that you're not going to even listen to CDs or music.
Right.
But it's prescribed, yeah.
Yes, if you follow the traditional practice, then that's the case. So a Jewish funeral service is very simple. It's usually conducted as close to the time of death as possible. There's sort of a misunderstanding in some ways that it should be within 24 hours. In most traditional communities, it will happen within a day or two of the person dying.
Not unlike in Islam, as a matter of fact.
Right.
As quick as possible, basically, as soon as possible after death.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think that probably had very practical beginnings, but I think now also psychologically it's a really important thing. I think there's that limbo time between the death of the person and the funeral, which is really difficult.
But the Jewish community stops and focuses and concentrates, is what you're saying.
Right, absolutely. Everything stops when the person dies and we focus on getting to the funeral. And until the funeral, all of the attention, I guess, is on the person who's died and honouring them in the most appropriate way possible. And then after that, our attention turns to the mourners and supporting and caring for them. And that's a community endeavour. It's not an individual process. So the Jewish funeral service, we have a simple coffin. It's the same coffin for everybody.
So no big gold numbers or anything like that?
No.
Deluxe coffins? No.
No. In traditional Judaism, actually, there's no coffin at all. You're buried in a shroud, but many countries have laws now that say you must be buried in a coffin. So if we need a coffin, it has to be plain wood and usually with no metal at all, not even nails. So the nails will be made of wood so that the entire coffin decomposes, along with the body and returns to the earth, which is what the tradition says that the body should do. And there's this notion in Judaism that we're all equal in death. You know, there's no rich and you don't take it with you. So in that moment, the rich and the poor, everyone alike, has the same coffin, the same service, and the individualization of it, I guess, is through the eulogy, speaking about the person who's died, and at that moment you honor them and you pay tribute to who they were in the world. And that's the focus then on the person who died, but the rest of the service around that is the same for everybody.
So Jewish celebrity funeral is sort of an oxymoron. In other words, it doesn't really happen if they're Orthodox, if they're observant.
Right. It's the same service. The only difference perhaps is that Jewish funeral services are traditionally not conducted in a synagogue. We have a funeral home or a chapel where the service is conducted, but for luminaries of the community, for great people in the community, then the service would be conducted from the synagogue. That's one of the the honours that can be given to a person. But beyond that, everything would happen the same for them. There's no viewing. They're wrapped they're dressed in a shroud. So everyone is actually dressed the same for their burial. And it's, like I said, the great leveller. You know, we come into the world the same and we leave it.
Yeah, I found it fascinating when you were explaining this to me as in the preparation, that it is exactly that, a leveller, without the celebrity, as it were, which brings me to the tough words that Archbishop Jensen used. He actually used the words vulgar egotism. Now, he was talking to his own people, but that's saying something very strong, I think, Chris, isn't it?
It is, but he's speaking into this vacuum where we've forgotten what death is. I think there's a real confusion when people come to us for a funeral, or they come to us in death, because they're unsure of what a funeral is. They're unsure how to, in their terms, farewell a friend. And I think this is where our funeral, the way in which we conduct a funeral is, we're not farewelling a friend necessarily as we are, we're mourning a friend, but we're also speaking of the hope that we have. You see, death reminds us that life is short and that that we don't go on forever and that we need rescuing. And the Christian gospel is about comfort in death.
So you're talking about contextualising it according to the theology of what the human person is and their relationship to God is what you're talking about here.
Yeah, I am.
Which is what Rabbi Ninio has just done, in fact.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Peter Williams, I think you're going to be agreeing with that again.
Yes. Our rites are all expressed through what we call the Order of Christian Funerals, and there are a number of different ways in which death can be ritualised. Ostensibly, what we're doing and what needs to be understood from the church's point of view, that a funeral service is an act of worship, principally. So when people come together, first and foremost, it's an act of worshipping God. And the Catholic understanding would be that we are worshipping God and we are also honouring the baptism of the person who has died, who was incorporated into the mystery of the life, death and resurrection of Jesus Christ.
So in effect, it's not only about the individual, again, contextualising in relation to God and relationship to God.
Exactly.
There you go. Can I ask then, Rabbi Ninio, you talked about the eulogy, and I remember in discussing this with you again that the eulogy is quite precise too. You've got to tell it exactly like it is, according to your tradition.
Yes, there are a number of rabbinic commentaries that say that it's important to recognise the person about whom you're speaking. So to definitely talk about their good qualities and the contribution that they made to the world and the blessings and the presence that they were in the world, but not to paint them in a light which makes them greater than they were.
Gild the lily, as it were.
Yes. I mean, I think you don't bring up all the negative, terrible things about them, but you also don't, make them greater than they were. You speak about the person and you honour exactly who they were in the world. And that's a really important part of the funeral service. Part of the funeral is to really, well, the purpose of the funeral, one of the purposes is to honour the person who's died and to acknowledge the life that they lived in the world.
So it is certainly personal. We are talking about, it's not just ignore the person, of course, but it is also about community. It's about the expression of the Jewish community, it sounds like, as well, and your way of doing things as a people.
Yes, and there are a number of prayers that are recited at the funeral service that cannot be recited without a quorum. We have something called a minyan, which is the minimum number of people that need to be present to recite certain prayers.
10, I think, is that right?
Yes, and in Orthodox circles, 10 men, and in progressive communities, 10 men or women. We count women as well. And that was considered to be the minimum number you needed to form a community, and no one should be alone to say those prayers, and so those prayers are only recited in the presence of at least 10 people, and that makes a community.
It is fascinating stuff. Now, music. When music comes into it, now, the Christian funeral is obviously not as prescriptive as the Jewish tradition. The Jewish tradition sounds like it's pretty straightforward.
Although I want to say the sermon is, I would say the sermon is the centre of the Christian funeral, because in the sermon we speak about Jesus.
From your faith tradition, it's the sermon which is most important.
Yeah, where the gospel is spoken out, and it's spoken out in the midst of death. We're here because somebody has died. We're here because things aren't as they should be. We're here because we can't fix this situation on our own. And the gospel is spoken, and it's the gospel that brings comfort to people hearing about what Jesus has done.
Rabbi Ninio, is there a sermon in a Jewish funeral service, or is it just the eulogy?
No, the eulogy is only the only spoken part. But the psalms and the prayers that can make up the funeral service speak very much about the fragility of life, the meaning and purpose of our existence and the presence of God and the turning to God for comfort and as a place to, to find healing and to find comfort and support. And it's very interesting at one of the customs that we have is before the funeral service, the official mourners have the opportunity to tear a piece of clothing, which is symbolic of the tearing of their heart. And as they do that, they recite a phrase in Hebrew, which is, blessed is God, the righteous judge. So at a time when you least feel like God has been righteous, God has taken away your loved one, the Jewish funeral service, I guess, requires you to affirm God's greater knowingness.
And Peter Williams, Chris has spoken of the sermon being central. Would you be saying the same, or you'd be saying other things as well?
We would be saying other things because the homily, the funeral homily, is meant to express Christian hope, and that would be bound. That would come out of the readings of the scripture that are proclaimed, if it's either a massive Christian burial or whether it's what we call liturgy of the word. But within the Catholic funeral rites, there's also provision for someone to speak in remembrance of the deceased. And that comes just before the final committal. So there is the opportunity for the celebrant of the Mass, or who's ever leading, if it's a liturgy of the word, it might be a deacon, or even in some places in the Catholic world these days, a layperson, would speak from the scripture. And then later on, there is this opportunity to speak in remembrance of the
deceased. That's in the service itself.
It is.
Now, Chris Timmons, when we were preparing, you were telling me that one of the things you notice in some of these ceremonies, particularly the secular ones, the non-religious ones, is the tendency of some people to say, or leaders to say, would anybody like to say something?
Yeah, it's something that's drifting in, and the problem is that Uncle Tom will stand up and he'll speak for 15 minutes about when they played cricket and running down the street and crashing bikes and doing whatever.
There are looks of recognition around the studio, I've got to say.
And then somebody else will stand up and repeat the same thing, and next thing you know, you're 45 minutes down the track and you've lost everyone sitting there. But Uncle Tom is
still going.
He still has to say what he needs to get out.
Well, I mean, this is quite apart from music then, of course. We're talking about music not being appropriate, and we're talking about reminiscences not perhaps being appropriate.
Well, I think part of the problem is that we now try to telescope the rituals surrounding death into one moment. Again, can I go back to the Order of Christian Funerals? Provides for a series of liturgical moments.
The vigil the night before.
Well, the vigil the night before, but even gathering in the presence of the deceased.
The wake.
Yeah. What we try to do, and with respect to Chris and the funeral industry, is, and not to put too fine a point on it, it is a very expensive exercise now. If you are going to allow all the rites that are in the Order of Christian Funerals to take place, then that could mean bringing the body of the deceased out to the church twice.
And all the costs
and
involved.
All the costs associated with that. And so, and also because of the pressure on time, I heard the other day of somebody who told me that they weren't able to attend the funeral of a friend because they would have had to have taken time out of work. It wasn't bereavement leave. It would only be bereavement leave if it was a relative. So what's happening now is that people are feeling under pressure, families are feeling under pressure, religious leaders who are leading the services feel under pressure to try and telescope everything in to a very short period of time. And that's why I think, Chris, you get examples of Uncle Tom. There should be occasions provided where people can actually memorialise and speak about the deceased, but maybe within the confines of 30 minutes, which is provided at, say, a crematorium chapel, is simply not enough.
No, that's absolutely correct. And it tends to be in more life celebration funerals than necessary religious funerals because that doesn't have that opportunity. But you're quite right that this is the problem that we're trying to, and the crematoriums are trying to pack us into this 45-minute segment, which doesn't work either. So certainly the costs and everything, you're absolutely right, trying to have the casket and the deceased brought back to the church the night before for a vigil mass or whatever is an expensive exercise and one that needs to be monitored.
These are all broader issues of time and appropriateness as well, and our lifestyle. I think that these are even bigger issues behind where we were starting with music and community, but they are all connected to this issue, Chris, I think, of being part of a community, each of these things that we mentioned, not just music.
I was going to say that I think people, when they get together for a funeral,
they don't know what they're after guidance. And often the first point of contact, whether it be a funeral director, a Christian minister, or whoever, is the person who will set them off on the track. I found that quite often my job is often either guiding people down the start or sometimes unhelpfully undoing unhelpful advice that has set them off in a total different direction, and which is where Ross and I have worked together on a number of occasions where that's been hard, not just with the service, but with the elements that go into the service, such as the music.
Well, that's something I want to come back to, of course. And Ross, I want to remind you of your song. Your song is coming up right now. Remember this?
Certainly do.
It is a lovely song, of course. And the movie was great, too, if you saw the movie.
Yeah, I can remember the pottery scene.
It was. Now, the point of the moment, though, is that while that music is great and we love it, why would you argue that when somebody comes to you and Chris and sits down and says, look, at my funeral, I want to have this because I love that movie and my father loved that movie and he's dead. What do you say to that?
Well, that's a tricky one because obviously people are in the worst stage of their lives. It's emotions run high. People don't think straight. Often people have been without sleep. They've often been with a person who's died. Often taken a while to die, sadly. But I think what we would like to gently point people to in terms of alternatives is that people have been dying since people were being born, say, thousands and thousands of millions of years, however you think.
A long tradition. Arguing for a long time and a long tradition.
So there's a tried and tested tradition within the Christian church of very, very beautiful, very profound music which expresses very powerful and helpful and uplifting truths in the most glorious musical language that's ever been written.
Well, let me give you an example, because we have Thou Knowest mm-hmm. Lord here. I think you'll know Thou Knowest Lord. Here we go. Yeah. Here's an example. Now, the reason I choose that is because that's from Lady Diana's funeral. And they're the funeral sentences out of your Anglican prayer book, aren't they?
It is, set by Purcell. And often sung as the coffin, the cortege, comes into the church or the cathedral, preceded...
As they did, in fact. They carried her coffin in and that was what was being sung.
Extremely. And I think, to be honest, in 50 years' time, that's what people will remember most vividly about Diana's funeral. They sort of more... non-traditional stuff, people, I think, will...
Are you sure? Don't you remember Rabbi Ninio's song? Rabbi Ninio's song, I remind you, and I think they might remember this too.
I think they'll remember Goodbye Norma Jean, I think, not England's Rose.
You sure they won't remember Rabbi Ninio's song? No, but I mean, you're persuading... The issue I'm getting to is taste here as well. It's a big issue, taste.
No, I think the issue is deeper than taste. I think...
Okay, how then? Please tell us how.
Because music for a funeral should express the great eternal things which people are facing at the moment. Loss, sorrow, eternity, hope, and, you know, things... I mean, I've played for probably about 2,000 funerals in my time here in England. I used to work at a crematorium. I used to see...
Negotiate these things
all the time.
So you and Chris Timmons will be on the same card here.
And I've heard it and seen it all. And in terms of funeral music, in terms of different types of funeral, you know, humanist funerals, spiritualist funerals, secular, everything. And what stands out in a Christian funeral is the music speaks of something much greater and much deeper than anything. For example, I say Goodbye Norma Jean.
That is simply personal or simply...
Which is simply... It's sentimental and it's beautiful and I like the song. But at the moment of death and dealing with the issues of death, what happens to my friend when they've died? You want to hear eternal truths addressed. And I think there's such a huge amount of glorious... Well, there's 1,500 years of Christian music which has tried to do that and has exercised the gifts of the greatest composers who've ever lived for that purpose. And they've come up with this great work of music which should be employed by people at these times and can give great comfort, does give great comfort, and will touch people's nerves where they need to be touched and consoled.
Chris, you wanted to jump in there.
I was going to say, one of the things about a Christian funeral, I was glad that Peter brought this up, is the Word of God speaks of not the past, but the future.
You're talking about eternal life.
Yeah, well, that is the great news of the gospel, and that is where a Christian funeral heads to, in the context of death. And I want to say what I struggle with, especially in my work with the healing ministry, where people are struggling with sickness and breakup in relationship and things like that. This is often a funeral for many people. It's the first time that people are confronted with death or a really serious break in relationship. And they struggle in our society, I think, because of the things that we've just touched on with community. I was speaking to somebody who's a healthcare professional in the church this morning, and he was sharing some statistics with me just based on the way that hospitals have no beds. It's because people die in hospitals now. Whereas he was saying 100 years ago, people died at home.
It's all being
around
medicalized. Yeah.
Families.
Yeah.
And so... here at the funeral, we don't have a culture, we don't have an existing culture of how to die anymore and what to say in death. And this is where the church for a long time has been saying, we're not just talking about now and the past, so we're not just going to sing a song about that Uncle Ted enjoyed or was a great memory to us, but we're speaking of eternal life and in the Christian context of what Christ has done.
Now, there's a number of things you've raised there, and I want to raise with each of you. But before we go on, if you've got a question or a comment or an experience you want to share or a question you wish to ask one of our panel, I'll remind you who our panel is because we've been talking a while. Father Peter Williams is the Vicar General for the Catholic Diocese of Parramatta, currently in charge for another 24 hours while the bishop's away. But he's also the former National Director of Liturgy for Australia, and he's been doing a lot of thinking about funerals, certainly in the Catholic context. Rabbi Jackie Ninio is from Emmanuel Synagogue, who takes care of funerals, bereavement, all that sort of stuff from Jewish perspective in a Reform synagogue. Chris Timmons is funeral director from Life Celebrations, which is one business which is adapting to contemporary demand in the market and the change. Canon Chris Allen is from St. Andrew's Cathedral and works at the Healing Ministry as well, where he is often in the position where he has to negotiate a state funeral or other funerals like that where it's sensitive and there are lots of issues at stake. And so is Ross Cobb, who works with him as director of music there. What we've been talking about is been prompted by the Archbishop of Sydney, the Anglican Archbishop of Sydney's comment about, you know, I did it my way. And we're trying to, I suppose, tease out the issues that lie behind belonging to a community, what a funeral tells about a person, what a funeral tells or does for the people left behind, what a funeral says about the future, what a funeral says about the past. And there's one thing I would like to come back to with you, Rabbi Ninio, if that's okay. And that's the question of eternal life, which is being stressed by Chris. Now, Jews, of course, the traditional rabbinical Judaism, of course, believes in eternal life. But that's not an emphasis, I think, in the funeral service for you, is it?
No, and because, as well, in Jewish tradition, these ideas of what happened after you die was never really a focus of Jewish thought or Jewish theology. It was really much more about we have to live the best life that we possibly can while we're on this earth, and we should focus on that, not on some reward or compensation or whatever it's going to be in a future life. So there is an idea that death is not the end, it's not the final moment, that there is something beyond death.
But it sounds like your focus is on the mourners and on the doing of the right thing by the person who's died, but not about their future, as it were.
Yeah, I think the major focus for the funeral service and for all the customs and traditions leading up to it is on respecting and honouring the person who's died. And then from that moment, once the coffin's lowered to the ground, and in Jewish tradition, we go to the cemetery, we stand around the grave and everybody participates in the burial. It's traditional to all put three shovels of earth
the soil,
onto
you
the
see
grave.
It in film, yeah.
Yeah, onto the grave, because it's the last act of of love that you can do for the person who died, and something for which they can never repay you. You do it as a, you know, you actually participate in the burial of the person who's died, and it's
a blessing to do this.
Yes, and it can be one of the most difficult moments for anyone. It's sort of at that moment, I think, that the reality of death and the reality of the loss really strikes home. When that thud of earth hits the coffin, there's nowhere to escape. You know, you really are confronted with it in the most stark and difficult way. But that's when your community is surrounding you. They're there with you and they're participating with you, and then they escort you back into the world.
Chris Timmons, you wanted to jump in there.
Just on that, if you go to the other side of the equation, what we see in cremation services particularly, we're getting to the point...
Which are on the rise, of course,
correct.
Too, aren't they?
Yeah. We don't even want to see the coffin be carried in. We don't want to see the coffin being moved. We don't want to close the curtains. We want to walk away and the coffin's there. So it's this sterility of the parting and lack of closure that is causing maybe other social issues down the track, but it's certainly something that we've observed over a number of years and is in complete contrast to what Rabbi's just said.
So you seem to be saying there, Chris, if I'm understanding you right, that you're observing as a director who sees many funerals that the sense of closure or finality doesn't seem to come out of some of the services you're observing. Is that what you're saying?
Many, many, many services do not get to the point of closure, and that's a major issue, a topic for another discussion, but certainly many psychological problems are coming out of that because there is no closure.
Father Peter Williams, in preparing for this, you mentioned to me three possibilities in the traditional Christian funeral from the Catholic perspective. You talked about a vigil, you talked about the actual funeral mass itself, and you talked about a third thing, which I've forgotten. Remind us what it is.
Oh, the third thing is what happens, of course, after the funeral is finished. The Catholic funeral service or the mass Christian burial suspends so that the liturgy continues even from the church and picks up again when you get to either the crematorium chapel or the graveside.
So it's the interment.
The interment. So and then, of course, traditionally with Catholics, as you know, and with particular cultures, there's always been the very strong tradition of a wake afterwards, which will take various forms.
All before, I think, is the Irish custom, because the body's there before, isn't it? That's the Irish.
Yes, I was saying to the rabbi before that when a Jewish person dies, they're not left alone. Somebody stays physically present with the body right from the moment they die right through to the actual burial. Mm.
We've got a couple of callers, and we should try to take them because they have called in and they may well have a question or a comment to make. Let me try and get this right in this brand new studio, which is super duper, a bit like a new jet plane, but let's see if I've got it right. Ron, have I got you there?
Yes.
Oh, I'm delighted. What did you want to say, Ron?
I'm wondering what the assembled people there think about the possibility of funerals where a chapel is involved and the person who's passed on is a person known to be a non-religious person.
Chris is ready to go there.
Beg your pardon?
No, Canon Chris is going to answer you.
Well, of course. Okay. This ties into something I wanted to say before. The Anglican funeral, and I would say the Reformed funeral service, isn't about the person in the coffin. It's actually for the benefit of the people who are sitting in the pews listening. It's a service of comfort. This is what Christians have to say about death. And so for that reason, we have funerals all the time for people who are not church people, because
you're comforting their friends and family.
The message we have is for you who are sitting here hearing the gospel being proclaimed.
Father Peter Williams.
I think people should be respected. If people are not religious and they don't want to have a religious funeral, well, they shouldn't have a religious funeral.
Right. But that's a question of their choices, what they've expressed or not.
That's a question of their choice, yeah. Mm.
And Chris Timmons, I presume you're happy to do it as they wish.
We've got an economic issue that we have to work with. And you'll find in a completely non-religious funeral, I've never had a situation where they've said, oh, he was a total atheist, he's a non-believer, but we're going to have a religious funeral.
Right. There's always some level of faith.
Whoever, the executor or somebody, will say, that's what he wanted, that's what he's going to get, or she. So.
Good. We've got one more call here. Joan, are you there? Have I got you?
Oh, hello. Good evening to you all. Good morning. I would just like to say, in the beginning you played the song My Way.
Oh, we did.
Well, I would say that most people in life cannot have things their way. And I think a very lucky person that would be able to play that at their funeral, to be, have that music at their funeral. And just a comment from me, for my own funeral at some time.
We're all planning them, really, at some
point. The song Abide With Me would be the song I would choose because... my father was on the Montevideo Maru.
Yep.
It was bombed, as you'd know, by the Japanese. And as it was sinking, the 1,535 Australian servicemen there sang Abide With Me as it was sinking. And so, to me, that would be the most important song that I could ever have.
Ah, that's an emotional connection. That's a very tricky thing you said there, though, Joan, because you have an emotional connection to an image. Haven't you? Which is somebody could also say about My Way, you see.
But I don't think Joan was saying that. I think she was saying that in terms of crisis, these servicemen, as they were singing...
Turned to God, is that
turned to God and yeah. sang... They didn't sing Goodbye Norma Jean or Goodbye England's Rose en masse.
They didn't sing Rabbi Ninian's song.
No. Or My Way, as you know, as they sank God. Beneath the waves.
Thank you. Well, look, thank you very much, Joan. Thanks for your call. Look, we've only got a couple of minutes, and I thought in the midst of this, we should also talk about some of the stuff which is good and why from your perspectives. Now, if you've got a client who comes to you and says, I just want this, this and this, Chris Timmons, it's business-wise, you've got to do it, haven't you? That's what you do.
You've got to do what they say. My father said to me 30 years ago, you might have six funerals in a day, but they're only going to one. So you have got to do what they want. In within the bounds of what the church is going to allow you to do, but if they
so you do have to think about that because the ministers will have a view as well and the congregation will have a view.
At the point we're making a funeral arrangement, we will certainly, if they're looking to go from a church, at that point, I will say these are the things you are going to be allowed to do, these are the things you might be allowed to do, and these things you won't, and you have to negotiate that with the priest. Now. A lot of people don't like that and actually step me back. But I know from experience that's what you have to do.
You've got to do. And Canon Chris, I think you would say, and I think I've heard the phrase somewhere, and I hear this also in Catholic circles too, the church is not just a hall for hire, I think is something you'd say.
Yeah, we do say that. You know, at the end of the day, people will make the choice. People can have a funeral with us or they can go somewhere else. You know, it's fantastic when people come to us because we love to be there for them. We've got a great number of resources at the cathedral, and I think we have a wonderful message to proclaim and to share with those who come. But at the end of the day, we don't want to lord it over people. So we've had people who've come, who've spoken to us, and then they've said, you know what, I don't think this is appropriate for us, and we're happy to support them in that.
At Father Peter Williams, I presume the same thing, that the Catholic Church will always have some sort of a negotiation about it. It's not just what you want, but it's partly to do with who we are as a community.
Well, yes, it is. And I go back, of course, that what we're doing is honouring the fact that somebody has been baptised. So for us, of course, it goes back to baptism and you are honouring the baptised person who is deceased and providing the church's rituals around that. So, of course, where the disconnect, Noel, often comes through, of course, is if a person was baptised when they were infant but then ostensibly hasn't practised the faith for their entire life and then comes back to the church right at the end or the family feel that they need to make that connection. That's often where you'll find the disjunctions will occur. And it requires very sensitive pastoral handling by the clergy. And by and large, I have to say... most of the priests and deacons who conduct funerals are very sensitive to people where they
realise they're upset. They're not going to be biting heads off, is what you're saying. Yeah. Mm. But Rabbi Nino, I'm still fascinated. Yes, now, do people ever come to you and say, I want this or I want that, or it just doesn't happen?
Yeah, sometimes. And we often have people who... It's really fascinating to me how many funerals I do for people who have been so removed and so distant from their Jewishness. But in that moment of death, it's very important to them to be connected with Judaism and connected with their tradition and their family and their roots, and also to have that their family supported by Jewish community at that time.
I want to thank the panel. We've run out of time. We always do with these things. Rabbi Jackie Ninio from Emmanuel Synagogue, Father Peter Williams, the Vicar General of Parramatta Diocese, Canon Chris Allen from St Andrew's Cathedral and Healing Ministry, Ross Cobb, the Director of Music from Healing Ministry, and Chris Timmons, Funeral Director from Life Celebrations, and also Chris Timmons Funerals is the more formal arm where you do the more traditional church stuff. That's
correct,
right.
Yes.
Thank you to you all, and
thanks, Tom.
We're finished.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights from ABC Local Radio. You can download more Sunday Nights interviews at our website, abc.net.au/SundayNights with an S.